It's always very valuable to have the opportunity to share our own regulatory experience, but also to hear about developments at the European and indeed at the global level with our AMAR colleagues, etc. It's always it's nice to have an opportunity to do that in an intense and very focused way that we have over today and tomorrow. What I'd like to do is I'm going to talk a little bit about the Irish regulatory experience, just briefly set out the landscape in Ireland in relation to community media services, and I will touch on television itself, which is still somewhat at a fledgling stage. But you will see that the approach, although radio has been very well established for some time, television is being approached in a very similar way. I'd also like to talk a little bit about the current statutory framework and the way that evolved, because really, in a way, the base, we actually had community radio in practice before we actually had it set in statute, which is slightly putting the cart before the horse. So you might like to hear a little bit about that. And I will just then touch on our own regulatory policy and our strategy for the development of community radio services. Just briefly, in relation to the landscape, we have in the area of radio services approximately 20 community services and six community of interest, and we have a number at any one time about 10 short-term services which are licensed for 30 or 100 day periods, up to 30 or 100 day, and this particular type of service has actually been very helpful in helping community services to become established in the local area. So I'll talk about that and how that works a little bit, and we have three television services which, as I said, have only been really in development over the last 5 years. Community radio services account for about a third of all radio services. So I think that'll give you an idea. I mean, it may not seem like a very high number, but Ireland is quite a small geographic area, and we've a limited number of radio services in any event. Community of interest services vary. It's been a means of facilitating some Christian radio services, but also some specific Irish language services, and in addition, campus or college-type services, which is similar to other jurisdictions. I suppose the drive for the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland in terms of having a strand of community service really comes from our own statutory objectives of having to ensure diversity and plurality in the broadcasting services that are available for Irish audiences. I suppose our current law dates from 2009. I suppose community really first appeared in any tangible way within the statute in 2001. But as I said, we managed to get around that nonetheless. I suppose what is very clear in the statute is that while we don't have a definition of media, the features and descriptions of community services really in effect serve to define what they're about. And those special distinguishing features really concern ownership, the type of content that's on services, and the way in which these services are financed and funded. Ownership is required to be representative of and accountable to the community served. And that really starts from two or more members of a local community. But in reality, the authority in approving a service would want to see a very broad range of representation and a very broad range of ownership based in the community. Content should address the interests of and provide social benefit to the community. And again, that really is a requirement on a service seeking a licence to be able to demonstrate how it manages to do that. In terms of funding, the statute states that funding can be used to defray expenses only. So basically, we're talking about not-for-profit type services that can have some commercial content, and I'll explain what is allowed around that. But ultimately, it's not about making profits, but rather to fund the service, and any profits arising must be reinvested in the service itself. A couple of more specific features of community services that are provided under the statute and which distinguish them then from some of the commercial activity is that the BAI is required to have procedures that will enable local communities regularly to offer an opinion on the types of licences to be offered by the BAI, and the authority must consider such submissions. Now, this is very specific to community services. So in other words, it allows for a bottom-up type approach. In reality, we don't sit in our offices and decide, well, we want a community service there or here. We actually, the way it works is that at a local level, groups tend to express an interest in forming a service, and they can work with us and indeed through their network organisation. So in reality, do people ever apply for community licences out of the blue? No, not really. We would always know where community groups are burgeoning or forming. They will typically have tried out a 30-day or a 100-day licence, or they'll have access to the local community radio support network. So we'd usually have a very strong sense of where these licences are going to come from. Another feature of the statute is that we may carry out an assessment of the broadcasting needs of a community in order to serve that community. So again, this helps us to link more with what it is that the community actually wants, and to ensure that the service to be provided is actually meeting the needs of the community. Specific to community television, the BAI must also arrange for surveys regarding community participation in television programme making and in viewing, and on the quality and relevance of content for the community to be served. And as I said, this is specific to television. So we must take the results of that into account in determining whether to award a licence or not. Other provisions that are specific to community television relate to effectively must carry provision on cable and MMD systems for such services. So as I said, there's been no problem really with that. It happens in a digital context. The digital cable services have plenty of spectrum and plenty of ability to carry those services. I think it is worth saying a little bit just about the history of the statutory provisions in Ireland, because as I said, the cart did kind of come before the horse, so to speak. A predecessor of the Broadcasting Authority of Ireland was a Radio and Television Commission, and as I said, they had a very broad remit in terms of the licensing of radio services. While the initial focus of that commission, which came into being around 1988, was on commercial radio services, there was a strong lobby group for the establishment of community services in Ireland. And again, just picking up, I suppose, on some of the queries, you know, and some of the diversity in terms of how community radio services have become established, I think there was no question in an Irish context that drive for community radio came from very much from the community development sector. It wasn't radio specific as such, but it was seen as a communication tool within community development activities, particularly, I suppose they in turn had their origins very often in perhaps maybe rural areas or maybe areas of economic, maybe not deprivation, but maybe economic disadvantage. You would have seen very strong community development organisations, and community radio very much grew out of that source of community activity, certainly in an Irish context. The BAI, the first commission, was a little bit nervous about the idea of community radio, but I think our second commission around 1993 took a much more open approach and was persuaded to license, under its broad licensing remit, it developed a community radio policy, which still very much has stood the test of time and is still very much underpins our community radio licensing activities to this day. And 1995 saw the first services licensed, and it's actually grown and developed since that time. I think one key feature of the, and I will talk a little bit about some of the features of the policy, but I think at the time, I think one thing that defined it as a very clear strand that differentiated it from both public service broadcasting and commercial broadcasting, because there were overlaps in terms of some of the content on all types of services. But I think one of the very strong features, if you like, that we looked to underpin community broadcasting as a distinct strand was the adoption of the AMARC Europe radio charter. And that, as I said, I think helped again with this this approach of trying to define it while it, at a point in time when it wasn't actually defined in statute. I suppose, as I said, the reason I mentioned the history is because I do think that I think regulators shouldn't lose sight of the fact that while community broadcasting may not be defined in statute, as a matter of policy, it's very often open to a regulatory body to take such initiatives. And, you know, if that is something that they value as being important in the interests of diversity and plurality. So our regulatory policy, and you'll see a lot of alignment between our policy and the statute. But as I said, this goes back in time and has stood the test of time fairly well. I suppose that, you know, while it hasn't defined it, while it didn't define community radio, we very much saw it, as I said, as an additional strand to public service media and to commercial broadcast. And we expected to see that the any community service would adopt the ethos and the values system of community development. In terms of ownership, community services should provide for membership, management and operation by the community served. We'd expect to see active participation by the community and, as I said, should operate with the ethos and value system of community activity. From a funding point of view, this has always kind of been an interesting one. There would have been a lot of resistance. We did confine the commercial activity to a maximum of 50% of total income earned by a station. But in reality, while people, I think, anticipated that this might be a problem, in practice it didn't actually turn out to be too much of an issue, really. We also have fettered, if you like, put an upward cap of 6 minutes of advertising per hour. And this would compare with 10 minutes that's available on commercial radio services. We also limited the commercial activity to the community area being served, and that was linked to events and services, work opportunities, and businesses that are operating in the geographical area served by the radio station. In the case of some of the campus stations, they would have had some of those operation capitation charge. So on top of the annual student charge per annum, they add a small amount, which is then hived off and actually funds the campus radio service. And that's actually worked. That's actually worked quite well. In terms of resources to support the service, you know, typically it's a mix of paid and unpaid staff, and it's primarily unpaid. The BAI would expect significant level of volunteer activity in radio services, and access, not just providing access but also training, is central to the ethos of community services, and that's certainly something that we look to see at a developed stage, at the point at which people are granted long-term licences. Also, I think from a resource point of view, we would certainly expect, and it's typically the case, that financial and other support will come from local community organisations and local development agencies. And this is something which can, you know, vary and cause problems from time to time. But by and large, I think that model of funding has worked well. While at time to time, you know, if one stream of funding stops, people can become concerned. But very often, it's replaced by another stream. So it hasn't been a huge problem. From a programming point of view, a BAI policy is that it should reflect the special needs and interests of audience served, and as I've been saying, should facilitate access by members of the community served. So I suppose, you know, we would expect a programme schedule. We would expect to see some very unique features. As I said, while there can be overlap between in content between, say, local commercial services and indeed public services, we do expect to see some very unique features, and that would primarily really link to access by and programmes being made by the local community. Just to say something then about our own strategy for community service, I suppose there's three principal strands, the first one being licensing. We have a very responsive licensing activity. We don't draw up a master plan for community services. It's very much responsive to community needs. And as I said, we, from our point of view as a regulator, it's critical to the achievement of our objectives of diversity and plurality. We operate very open application processes, which is quite specific to community. And this, we believe, facilitates the more organic nature of the way community services develop and grow. And we strongly promote the use of the 30-day and 100-day radio licences. We did have a situation where services often applied to us for licences, and you go through quite a long and protracted process of negotiating the broadcasting contract and all of that, and very often stations were not necessarily fully ready or fully developed to deliver that service. So we do encourage people to, if you like, try it out and build capacity in particular through the use of the 30-day and the 100-day service. And in fact, the category of temporary licence, which is a 100-day license, is only available to community services. 30 days are more open. They're open to community or any other type of service. But 100-day licences are only open to community services. And that allows, for example, it would allow for a station to operate on a weekend basis for a whole year. And it gives them a sense of what's involved, the resources that are necessary. And critically, as I said, it really is around building capacity. I mean, from a licensing point of view, community services really operate in a very similar way and on very similar terms to commercial broadcasters. They still have to adhere to the same codes and rules. But when it comes to monitoring and regulating them, then I suppose there would be key things that would be different. So, for example, measuring audience size is not, you know, that would be quite strong in the commercial field, but it's not appropriate in a community context. Whereas what we would focus on in monitoring would be the extent to which access has been provided, the diversity of content within the schedule of that services. Those are the kinds of things that we would look from a regulatory point of view, as well as adherence to the financial, you know, requirements, etc. The two other principal elements of the strategy would be finance and network training and development. And we have a programme support fund in Ireland called Sound and Vision, and it's open to all actors, both public service, commercial and community. But the community sector has done quite well in terms of accessing support for programme making. Both television and radio have done quite well in this regard. In 2012, they would have accessed approximately €1.5 million for programmes being made, and the bulk of that probably would have gone to radio, because we've only three television services. I think around €500,000 would have gone to television, whereas radio would have availed of €1 million, and that leverages quite a lot of content from a radio point of view. And then in terms of network training and development, I think Bernard alluded to this earlier. We have a structured multi-annual support programme, which one of the key features of that really is to support the network of community and community of interest stations. And this is quite a critical, and it's a strategic way, I suppose, for us to work, because that, in supporting and providing finance for the community network, we actually leverage a lot of support ourselves. They're there to support and particularly to help fledgling stations to grow and develop. And in fact, I suppose one of the most critical things is that they really try to ensure that new stations actually apply the ethos and really give life and meaning to the type of the ethos that the authority wants within community radio services. So it's a very strong network, it's well established, and as I said, for us on an annual basis to give relatively small amounts of funding support has been quite critical, and they in turn provide both training and development opportunity for their constituent parts. So that works well, as well as supporting generally community radio. So just to conclude, and I hope I haven't taken too long, but I suppose just a few current and sort of future issues. Some of them won't be unfamiliar to yourselves, but funding and resourcing of community services is always an ongoing perennial problem. The only thing I'd say is in Ireland, while we've had a few community services that have had to shut up shop, nobody has failed because of funding. They have generally tended, and I've listed kind of governance there as the sort of the third issue, but in reality I think a lot of the services have had some governance type problems really that have, you know, where that perhaps the operation of the service just wasn't set up in a way that was sufficiently robust to enable it to sort of process issues as they were arising. And we have done some work through the CRAIL network in relation to governance. We've done a code of good governance practice for community services, it is an area we try to focus on, but that's tended to be the issue much more so than funding. The pace of development in community television is slower, and that's largely not so much because of spectrum issues, but because of more because of the funding and the scale of funding that's required to support it. As I said, our Sound and Vision Fund aims to try and give some assistance there, but it's a slower pace of development, and we would expect that to continue for some time. And finally, in relation to access to platforms, occasionally this becomes an issue, but it hasn't been a huge issue. Probably DAB at an Irish level terrestrial digital audio broadcasting has been a little bit slower in the wider environment. So community is not there yet, but as I said, neither is commercial radio. We're very much still in the FM side of things. Although obviously they're all operating online and that. And television television, as I said, that's the one area where there is access, certainly to cable on a must carry basis, cable and MMD, which in any area would probably give, you know, somewhere between 40 and 60% reach in terms of target potential. Digital terrestrial broadcasting is an expensive, digital terrestrial television would be very expensive for community, and it's probably outside of their reach at the moment, as is satellite, but it does seem to function pretty well in relation to cable. But again, that's just one of those areas that we will keep under development. As I said, I think, you know, Ireland is, we feel, is in reasonably good shape, but as I said, I think a large part of that comes from a commitment to provide diversity in content and plurality in both source of content and in outlet. And I suppose there are key drivers that that keep us as a regulator with a strong commitment towards community broadcasting.